controversy after charges are dropped against a police officer in Jacksonville who beat up a handcuffed teenager. What are the particulars of this case? We'll take a closer look. Good Thursday morning, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are live from Studio 5, as we are every day at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, attorney John Phillips, who represents the teenager who was beaten up by former police officer Timothy James. What happened here? What are your questions? Get on the line now. 549-2937. Then later, as kids get ready to return to school, The Art Attack joins us to talk about arts education, as music, art, and PE are all saved from the local school budget acts. Plus, speaking of the arts, you can have some laughs this weekend at the LOL Jax Film Festival. We'll tell you about that, too. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a police officer who beat a handcuffed teenager in the city will avoid jail, and he can continue policing as a result of an agreement with prosecutors to drop charges against him. Timothy James is set to resign this week from the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and he's agreed that he will not serve as an officer in Duval, Clay, or Nassau counties for the next 3 years. He can work elsewhere, though. Now, James had a lengthy record of internal affairs complaints with JSO, but the state attorney's office says there was a strong chance a jury wouldn't convict him. Jacksonville attorney John Phillips has called the outcome of this case preposterous. He represents the teen, Elias Campos, and he joins us now with more about this case. John, good to see you.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. What are your questions about this case? Give us a call as we talk about the latest controversy to impact JSO when it comes to issues with trust in the community, allegations of excessive force and things like that. Give us a call now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. All right, so this officer was arrested in June of last year when he beat up this teenager who he was arresting, Elias Campos. He was 17 at the time. What happened?
So Elias was in a convenience store and, you know, really doing no wrong. And a cop, Tim James, approached him and asked him for his license. And he resisted and said, no, I'm good. And it kind of heated up to the point that Tim James got angry, and there were about three different incidents as discussed in the state's disposition report where a level of force was used. But Tim James was arrested because his sergeant, his superior officer, saw Tim James forcibly shove Elias Campos, teenage Elias Campos's face into the partition between, you know, in a police car. While he was handcuffed, and it chipped his tooth, and you can see a gash in his head. And so when JSO turns in JSO, when good cops turn in bad cops, and on top of that, you have such a just a contemptuous history from tweets, from Facebook posts in 2016, where he says he's going to monkey stop somebody that if he sees them and put a boot to their head, to running over another client of ours and killing them at a high rate of speed, to what happened with Daniel Nyman outside of Shands, where he and his wife, you know, physically detained this.
Yeah, 11 internal complaints for James. 7 were sustained
over and over again.
Okay, so according to the record, an officer who had a problem with excessive force. Let's get to the resolution,
right?
And this is why you're here, John, because in the end, prosecutors decided not to prosecute this officer. Why not?
So there's a couple of reasons in Matt Kuevener's disposition report. The main reason is they indicated some level of fear or concern with being able to get a jury to side against an officer. And, you know, that's, as a lawyer, that means I don't take tough cases. Well, that's not the standard. we have to take tough medical malpractice and civil rights cases. Otherwise, justice isn't served. And it also shows a level of being light on crime if you're not going to prosecute tough cases. If what you do as a profession or how much money you make tips the scales of justice towards you being fearful of what a jury would do, that's not equal justice. And it seems like if you're a police officer, they're going to get more breaks than the average citizen.
Juries all over the country are reluctant to convict police officers, even if there is a fair bit of evidence showing they committed a crime. The reservoir of goodwill juries have for police is deep, John, and because they see them doing a very difficult, dangerous job. But what you're arguing is justice should be blind in this case.
Justice should be blind. And I fully agree that police officers should get the benefit of the doubt. We need body cameras to verify whether that doubt was true or untrue.
And there was video of this incident, wasn't there?
There was, but it was kind of convenience store cameras and you can't really see what happens inside the car. But I'm fine with jurors giving police officers the benefit of the doubt. They have a very tough job, and I am as supportive of good cops as one can be. But when you have a sergeant willing to testify against a sheriff's deputy turning on their own, a good cop versus a bad cop, you've got to prosecute that case. You've got to protect the reputation of the good cops by fully and fairly prosecuting the ones that not just violate civil rights, but commit serial misconduct and even brag about it on social media.
And he had apparently done that. He'd bragged about giving people a whoopin' on social media, things like that. Under state law, a prosecutor said it was unlikely they could have presented any of that evidence at trial. Is that right?
I had a conversation with the state attorney's office about that very thing. And their argument is, it's called the Williams rule, that some of these prior incidents and some of the statements would be challenged by the defense attorney. And it would be up to a court. And they felt that they had a hard time with possibly get a ruling. But my point back was, if you're going to essentially agree to a punishment that's inconsequential, why not take the chance? Why not set the precedent? Why not let a judge do what judges are supposed to do? Because if you win, you've got leverage. If you concede, what difference does it make? Because judges want to hold the system accountable too. And it just, it again, saying, I will never accept any lawyer saying that's too hard, so I'm not going to do it.
We'll go to your calls for Attorney John Phillips on the Elias Campos case here in a moment at 549-2937. Okay. After being hit by this officer, your client, Elias Campos, says that he blurted out, "That's why people want to kill cops. That's why they hate cops." Did he say that?
He denies saying that. But he was upset. He had just been beaten three times and had been picked on. And I can't excuse and won't excuse any disrespect to police officers. We handle tough civil rights cases and we don't go there. It's not, we got to treat everybody with respect. But by the same token, when you've just had your face shoved into a partition and chipped your tooth and broken, scraped off a portion of your face, you say things you possibly shouldn't out of anger.
There is a lot of anger in this community when it comes to this issue. As in many communities, this is not, I don't think, what Sheriff Williams, the kind of case Sheriff Williams wants to see in the media as he's trying to build trust, build better relations with communities in Jacksonville that don't trust police.
This is the same case. There's two cases that we have related to this officer. And this is the same officer that we got a $300,000+ bill to a public records request. There's been problems and kind of, some questionable acts by the sheriff's office. And look, when JSO investigates JSO, which happens here, happened in Borisotti, happened in all these arrests, if there's the possibility of a civil suit, they have a conflict of interest in investigating themselves because the department could be sued. And so when you have members of the department investigating members of the same department, and the department could be liable or the fellow officers could be liable, your brothers in arms could be liable, it's a conflict. And we never outsource to FDLE or to other departments investigations. I'm still very angry and upset that we don't have body cameras because it would protect officers and
Sheriff
people.
Williams is piloting that. Right.
The pilot is the 200 person or the however many team pilot is over. And we're sitting right now. Jacksonville has no body cameras and very few cruiser cams out in the public. And he said, OK, maybe by 2019, we'll actually have it in place. And in every other, you know, jurisdictions are popping up with these cameras nonstop. And it's just frustrating because you hear all of these incidents, you know, the one with Uncle Bert where he was shot with a knife and there's questions from both sides, what happened, you know, but that's not a civil rights case because we don't know what happened and the officer should get the benefit of the doubt. But how many of these, how many bodies, how many injured people need to pile up before we start asking serious questions about our sheriff's office?
All right, let's go to your calls on this. Let us know your thoughts about body cameras for local police, your questions about this case. Lots of calls for Attorney John Phillips right now. Willie in Murray Hill. Hey, Willie. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Ms. Ross. I'd like to say that there's two sides to these stories. And like I said, we don't know what happened with the young man or what, you know, made this happen, but it's a long history of the disrespect of the Jacksonville, Florida, you know, police department for the African American community and the poor white community. And it kind of goes along, but you can't blame the police all the time now because we have a community here. And if the African American community, especially the clergy now, if we sit back and let this continue, you know, without saying anything, and they need the same mentality that they have for loving these Jacksonville Jaguars, the black community I'm talking about, how they jump around by these football teams, they don't care nothing about the community, and put that energy into what's going on with these police officers. It could happen to anybody. I mean, not mostly white people. Black people, right.
Yeah. Thanks, Willie. Okay. Certainly people of color feel that way.
And certainly. And Elias Campos was. And the issue here is when you don't prosecute officers that are bad officers, everybody agrees you don't post this stuff on social media. You don't have a serial of abuse like this and keep your job outside of being a member of JSO, apparently. But you, if you don't police the bad officers, you entitle the ones that are going to make those calls. And so you're just punishing the good officers. 90-something percent of officers are out there putting their lives on the line, trying to do a good job. And when you don't punish the bad, you punish the good.
Well, here is how Officer James is being held accountable. He must complete 50 hours of community service, anger management. He has to pay $170 in fines. If he violates any laws in the next 3 years, the state attorney's office could refile misdemeanor battery charges. That's what he would have been charged with. Or was he charged with misdemeanor battery?
He was charged and it was null prost.
It was okay. And he cannot work in this area as a police officer for the next 3 years, but he could go elsewhere.
Let me correct you. So this area, your WJCT listening area, I assume is outside of
Duval, Clay, and Nassau. Yes,
correct.
It is.
So there are people that can hear your radio show that could have Tim James as an officer tomorrow.
All right.
And that the one thing that I asked the state attorney, I said, all right, look, you're going to do what you're going to do. But if you don't hold tight and take away his certificate to be in law enforcement, either temporarily or permanently, we're in trouble here. This is a bad precedent.
Otis in Jacksonville. Hello, Otis. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello. My concern is this, you know, every time an incident occurs, We always say that the policemen, they do a tough job. A lot of us was in the military. Our job was, our lives were put on the line also. The police, until the police stop abusing poor people, and I'm not going to just limit it to blacks, poor people. Every time a poor people sat on the juror, when a jury against a citizen against the police, we should just say not guilty and let everybody see how that feel. The state attorneys who do not want to prosecute these cases, they need to be voted out. These guys do not need a break. Everybody that commits a crime in the city, they hurry up and throw the book at them without any word said. And we're not going to give you a second chance. We'll give you one after you get out of prison. That's when we'll give you a second chance. You're going to jail, and this guy should be in jail for assault. Thanks
for the call. You know, there is new leadership at the state attorney's office. State Attorney Melissa Nelson ousted former prosecutor Angela Corey in one respect because she pledged to go in a different direction. Right. In terms of being less cozy with the police, being less punitive with juveniles, that was a big part of her campaign. Smart justice.
Right.
You know, the whole concept of smart justice, which has become much more in vogue, I think, around the country. She's much more in line with that than Angela Corey was. So
I agree with that. I knew them both. I worked closely with Angela and her team in the Michael Dunn prosecution. I mean, we were in those rooms, and I'd like to say I've worked with Melissa Nelson's team, except we have Keegan Roberts where they didn't charge Michael Sentani. We've got another case where a colorectal surgeon was a peeping Tom on people in the bathroom and they haven't made an arrest there. We've got Tim James who had a serial of abuses, and you know, they're going to null pros that case. So I'm not seeing what I want to see out of our state attorney's office. And I respect her. I respect Sheriff Williams. I voted for both of them, but we're to the point where, as that last caller said, we've got to see, you know, there's the expression about singing to the choir, and Jacksonville has a beautiful choir of disenfranchised African Americans, Hispanics, and that choir needs to start singing. They need to show up for jury duty. They need to let their voices be heard. And they did, frankly. Melissa Nelson was a bit of a mandate. And we can't keep running into the same circle of insanity with how prosecutions are done. And I know I'm going to get a call after the show and say, John, you know, you're using a couple of examples as, you know, to define this entire situation. And I just don't have any other examples of being hard on bad cops. And that's what we need. This was the guy to make an example of, even if you lost, you had to try.
Well, lots of calls on this. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the case where an officer, Tim James, won't face charges after a controversial beating incident of a Jacksonville teenager. What are your questions? Do you think body cameras on local police could more adequately resolve some of these controversies or not? Let us know what you think. Let's go to AJ now in Arlington. Hi, AJ. Hello. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Hey, John. This is AJ with Mad Dads. John, I'd like for you just to talk about what message the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office is sending to the community by letting this officer off and the state attorney's office. And since they're trying to build relationships with the community, what type of message does it send to the community as a whole? Thank you. I'll take my question off there.
AJ, you and I have walked with Mike Williams in the community. We support what JSO is doing, and we still don't have enough community policing. We still don't have body cam. We need some stuff.
Do you think under Williams it's going in a more positive direction than under his predecessor?
I don't know. I would have answered that question 6 months ago differently than now. I've never gotten a $314,000 bill to a public records request. I've never had a debate of press conferences on this very case. I've you know, what the state attorney did too is let JSO off the hook, where this guy could go from paid administrative leave, where he was going and had a desk job, to getting some of his retirement pay or vacation pay and move off without JSO having to make a tough decision too. And the union here is very powerful.
And by the way, let me, since we don't have anyone from the police on the show today, let me make sure that we get their position on the air. Steve Zona, the police union president, was asked about this case. And his quote is this: "The criminal justice system has worked as intended, and we wish Tim James well in the future." So from the position of the union, the system worked. Tim James is no longer on the local force, and he will face some accountability in terms of having to go to anger management, having to do community service. So from the police's point of view, that is an adequate resolution.
There's no more passive aggressive behavior than my Twitter account and Steve Zona's Twitter account when we go at each other. We love each, we respect each other, but I don't love each other. But I didn't love me. But we respect the heck out of each other. But you know, worked as intended. That doesn't mean justice was served. It means that the system did what the system did, and as the head of the FOP, his duty is to protect officers even when they mess up. That's the case. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it worked as intended, but it's not intended, I guess, if that's the argument, to serve equal justice in the disenfranchised community.
All right, let's take a few more calls on this. Mark at the Beaches. Go ahead, Mark. Mark, are you there? All right, Mark. We'll try you back in a minute, or you try us back. Another Mark. Mark on the West Side. Hello, Mark on the West Side. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Yeah. The reason this police officer was let walk away relatively unscathed, I have to believe, is that this teenager must have had some egregious past behaviors on him, and I'd like to know what those are that would make his behavior so questionable.
Okay, what did the teen's priors? What were they?
He didn't.
He had none.
I think he had a theft as a minor that would have been sealed. But I mean, there's no egregious behaviors. And again, at the end of the day, a cop saw another cop slam his head into a partition. And so there's no need to do a victim's analysis on that. If he was Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, and again, this is Trump's America, I guess, where hitting their head on the way into the paddy wagon is okay by civil rights standards. But I tend to believe that the Bill of Rights and the Constitution should be enforced each and every day in this country.
All right. Lots of tweets on this case. Here's a couple. $170, that's a joke. I had to pay more than that for adjudication withheld on a possession charge. Jay tweets the show, "We need to completely rethink what it means for police to protect and serve and fundamentally restructure the entire process from recruitment, training, and certification to management and oversight." Here's a tweet from Tara Wilds. She used to run the Duval County Jail. Tara tweets the show, "Is it possible James's law enforcement certification will be pulled by the Florida Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission? If internal investigation is sustained, they should review."
I saw that, and we're working on that, and we may or may not have an announcement next week about a civil suit. So, you know, and we're gonna push. You know, this can't happen in Jacksonville.
Well, here's an email from Andy. "The Elias Campos case is yet another wake-up call to people of conscience to get out and vote." All right, let's go to a few more calls. Jay is on the North Side. Hello, Jay.
You know, I hear all the time how these police officers say what a tough job they have. As a Korean veteran, I wish some of those would go on the front line and fight in some of these walls, and they'll see what a tough job is. And all this kind of crap that they're talking about a tough job, they volunteered to do it. In the service, we had no choice. We appreciate it. Thank you, Melissa, for your program.
All right, thanks for that. Mark, back out at the Beaches. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
So I have two issues, and the first one is the fact that this was negotiated down and null prost is fine to me, because the conviction for a misdemeanor would likely not have been as tough as what it is, including that 3-year abatement.
My concern is, why isn't someone addressing the sheriff's department one-on-one? How did it get this far? If you had seven sustained complaints and they were all circling around the same concept, how did it, why does he still have it? Why did he still have a job on the day that he did this to this young man? That's number one. And the second one is the concern for me. Okay, 3 years, he cannot go to these three counties, and you guys are mentioning that he can go to a surrounding county, he could go somewhere else. The concern there is the privacy laws don't allow HR, JSO, to say, oh, yeah, we dismissed him, and, you know, they can't go into that conversation. So there's that hole in the system. The fact that it negotiated down, I'm fine with it because it probably wouldn't have included the 3 years.
All right.
How did it get this far?
Thanks for those points, Mark. You know, the whole notion of how this may be somewhat of a bad analogy, but how priests who had issues with molesting children would be passed from parish to parish. And that went on for many, many years. And the new parish would have no knowledge of the priest's bad behavior.
In this profession, it's called gypsy cop. And, you know, the good thing is shows like this and news coverage like this hopefully will let an HR department somewhere else say, oh, gosh, let's pass on this candidate. But again, dating back to what, 2016? Yep, it's that kind of night already. Somebody's getting a size 13 boot to the A double space tonight. I can feel it. Someone just learned a hard lesson about showing your A double, you know, line
this
in
Jacksonville. This was his Facebook page, you're saying.
You get a butt whooping to boot, except he didn't say butt whooping. Yeah, I'm gonna monkey stomp you. Like, and you know, with respect to Steve Zdona, he was a Facebook friend of him at that time. And he took his defense at that time. And okay, well, then what about the next time? Then what about the next time? Then what about the time he just haphazardly lost his gun on duty? You know, there was so much with this officer that you know, we can get caught up in the academics of this trial, but that's why the Williams rule, you know, hearing was so important. And prosecute him for the other ones too. You know, do something.
So where are you going to take this now that they've said, look, we're just going to close the book on this?
Well, you know, we're going to take it to your show and then, you know, the best listeners in Jacksonville. And then, like I said, we're going to file. I suspect we're going to announce that we're going to file a civil suit soon.
All right. Well, thanks for updating us.
My
thanks
pleasure.
For coming. He's attorney John Phillips. More on this on our website later today and much more still ahead on the radio. Meanwhile, later. Look ahead to the LOL Jax Film Festival. But up next, art and music education saved this year from the budget acts in Duval. A look at the importance of art education. That's next in our Art Attack. Stay with us.
WJCT's Jaguars season parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
He asked me out, and I have to say yes, because guess why? Ends up he had been driving around the block for a month waiting for me to come out, and nothing says love like stalking.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, True Stories Told Live, from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
gotta have art.
All you really need is art. When those little things in life make you frown, come on down and get a start. First you gotta have art, a great Rembrandt.
Welcome back. Well, kids are headed back to school later this month, and in Duval County, some good news: art, music, and physical education will all be part of the curriculum this year. They have been spared from the budget acts. It's good news for arts advocates who know the incredible value of teaching these subjects. The academic benefits pay dividends for years to come. We're talking about the importance of art education on the eve of back to school in today's Art Attack as we welcome Jeff Smith, Director of Arts for Duval County Public Schools. Good morning. Is that the right title?
It's Supervisor of Arts.
Supervisor. Oh, I demoted you. Sorry. Jane Condon, former principal at Douglas Anderson of the School of the Arts and La Villa School of the Arts. Hey, Jane.
Hey.
Allison Galloway Gonzalez is here. She's Executive Director of Any Given Child Jacksonville and Chief Program Officer at Cathedral Arts Project.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. And then rounding out our foursome, Shawana Brooks, Jacksonville Public Library Arts and Culture Developer.
Good morning.
What a great group and what a great topic. Let's start with our school, current school person, Jeff Smith. How excited you must be that in the budget for the school year, art and music was kept in. I guess there had been some discussion about whether to eliminate that from as a line item and PE too. So let's talk about that first off.
Yes. Well, obviously a $62 million budget shortfall and trying to deal with making sure that our school board and superintendent, our school system has a balanced budget is critically important. And part of there obviously have been many ways that the school district has had to look at resources and how we support the different programs. And so one of the things that had been on the table was to reduce some of the positions at the elementary level for our art and music and PE. And so through the work of our new superintendent, Dr. Diana Green, and our school board, many of those positions have now been restored to ensure that every student has access to weekly instruction, art, music, and physical education.
That's exciting. That's Jane Condon, you led both the La Villa School of the Arts and Douglas Anderson. And of course, you were instrumental in creating the La Villa School of the Arts. Can you explain why this is such a big deal for our students this year? I was relieved to hear this myself.
Well, the fact that we have these two specialized art schools is wonderful. But also, we need to make sure that all students are given an opportunity to experience all the benefits that the arts bring to students, the way the arts teach and allow students to interact with each other in a very, very positive way. When you think about a young person being in a production, say they're in a band, everybody has to be there, everybody has to play. And so the opportunities that the arts offer a student are not just for those students who are extremely talented, but students who get the opportunity to be creative and to be creative with their friends.
Allison, that's what Cathedral Arts Project is all about, bringing the arts into schools that so that kids that might not otherwise have the opportunity can get the benefit of this kind of curriculum. There's not nearly enough of it. I don't think in our school system.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the balance that we're all trying to strike. So Cathedral Arts Project has been in existence for 25 years, and at times it's filled an absence, a gap, and at times it's been part of creating a really high level of engagement with the arts. So we know that arts are very important as part of the school day curriculum, and that's sometimes what varies. And then Cathedral Arts Project often comes in the out of school time and makes sure there's sort of resources mm-hmm. there to get into La Villa and Douglas Anderson and now Fort Caroline. you have to have a background at some point in the arts. And what we want to do is make sure, and what Jeff and the community has made sure, is that at the elementary school level, every kid is going to have access to the type of experiences and skill building in the arts that that those in more affluent neighborhoods have ready access to.
Right. Shawana Brooks, and going outside the walls of school buildings, there are lots of other places where parents can make sure their children are exposed to the arts, like the library is just one where you work.
I love that. Like, and I think that it's so important having the arts in schools, and then also when school is let out, being able to have a safe space that children can come in and create. That definitely is one of the spaces that we offer in the main public library, having the Jack's Maker space there, and also having a free and open public gallery that anyone can come in and be inspired by what they see on the walls, and then literally just go right over and start creating something for themselves. That's an opportunity, again, that should not be for, as Allison said, just people who have access to the arts. Everyone should be able to have that particular access on any given day and to be creative. We all have a skill set. And I think once we prepare children for that, then we're also preparing our arts community for later. So as they grow in and they get older, they're going to be more art appreciators. And we certainly need that in our community.
It's our Art Attack on the show as we talk about art education today. Dean is in Arlington. Hey, Dean, good morning. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to take a second and give appreciation just generally to the conversation. I have a couple of daughters that go, one goes to Pine Forest, that's a feeder school to La Villa, and one actually goes to La Villa right now. I just wanted to say that there's a lot of truth in what they're saying as far as the arts being a key to greater academic standards and just outcomes. I think we all know the challenges that a lot of the public schools in Duval County face, and I work with a lot of people who have the choice whether to live here or in St. John's County, and they do oftentimes pick St. John's County, and I feel like I use every opportunity to sell the public school system that I use to get where I am, and I just wanted to give an appreciation to the guests and what they're speaking about. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Dean. Jeff.
And I just want to respond to that caller and say I wholeheartedly agree that the arts build academic, social, and emotional growth in our students and have so many transferable 21st century skills for other areas.
And when it's been measured over and over.
Over and over again. When we talk about workforce development and the impact on community and quality of life. But I also, I love what the caller said about marketing. And as our school district continues to market the tremendous programs and works to moving from a B to an A as a district, the arts and arts intensive programs and arts programs and comprehensive schools in every one of our schools are a marketing tool and something that draws parents to our schools time and time again. And so I think that that's something that will continue to draw parents and families who might consider private school options or options in other counties to come to Duval County.
Jane Condon, all of this discussion goes back to what motivated you to be the driving force. When was it? I forget what year La Villa was founded. 1986, when you were the driver in founding La Villa.
Well, no, I found it. I was at Douglas Anderson in 1986. I went 1 year after it opened and stayed there 10 years and realized daily what wonders were happening to young people who were having the opportunity to dig deeply into the ways the arts affect their lives. And then I went to La Villa. I retired from Douglas Anderson and got a call, you want to come back and start a middle school? And I said, middle school? But I am so happy
you weren't
I
sold
did.
At first, were you?
I'm so happy I did. I actually have a granddaughter who's at there today for her first day of school.
And full disclosure, my older daughter went through La Villa. My younger daughter's still at La Villa. as we've been discussing, not everyone's child is at an art school. What are some other options for parents that want to expose their children? Let's talk about that, too.
I think those options are growing for us as a community really well. So, I mean, Cathedral Arts has that long history. About 4 years ago, we launched Ensuring the Arts for Any Given Child. And that's really sort of building the community awareness and appreciation for arts education and the resources and the places where those kids can access. So we actually have community centers like Don't Miss a Beat and Jams that are working neighborhood by neighborhood. Right. We have a high interest in our amazing arts organizations. I think some of the major museums have been doing this a long time, but even the smaller arts organizations are including education of young people in the arts as part and parcel of their mission statement. That's a big movement for us.
Mike on the South Side. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm so excited to hear this conversation. I have a good friend who's a teacher, a couple of them actually, who are involved at Douglas Anderson, and my youngest son is starting there in just a few weeks. I wanted to know how people can get more involved in promoting the arts and promoting, you know, getting more funding and moving the needle on this, both on a political and a social level. It seems to me we need more ground game, you know. If they're talking about cutting funding and then we're fighting the battles for funding, what kind of things can we do to help overcome that and push back on that and make that happen? Thanks, and yeah. I'll listen off the air.
Thanks, Mike.
So I would say there are several opportunities to support the arts in schools. One, at the ground level with the school by joining the booster organization or foundation. Douglas Anderson, in particular, you mentioned, has a foundation that works to raise funds on behalf of that school. And quite honestly, also to bring in teaching artists that sometimes visit other schools as well, because they do a lot of partnering programs with other schools throughout our county to support the arts programs. And also to join, there are a few organizations, the Arts Advisory Council for our district, that provides recommendations regarding the strategic work of arts in our schools. And they're actually meeting for their retreat on August 11th at UNF, and the public is welcome to attend. And Any Given Child Jacksonville, there are many, many hands, and it takes a village. So volunteers are welcome to join that organization. And Allison could speak to that. But I think joining those organizations, getting involved and having, a mission, whether you're focusing on the fundraising piece or advocacy with our state legislators and federal officials, because ultimately what we need is more funding for public education in our schools.
And to Jeff's point, I think that those are all really great ways to start. The one thing that, you know, I personally know just as a community person is you have a voice, and because you have a voice, you have a village behind you. Don't wait until the fire is in your backyard to start planning to extinguish it. We can start talking about arts advocacy on an everyday level, and people can be involved and write to concerned officials about how they feel about that. And that's how you can continue to make sure that we have that kind of funding. And so next time when these challenges come up, it won't be the arts that will be looked at as a possible line item. We'll be able to continue that conversation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I have to say that we know this environment that we're in, is particularly in Jacksonville, has come from many fronts. So there's decision making at the local level, but that is in response to decision making at the state level that happened around budgets last year that we wanted people to respond to, both on the public education in the public education arena, but also for arts and culture. So those arts organizations that are helping provide these resources are also in a bad way, and
need
federal
help
funds.
Too. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you're representing amazing organizations, and we thank you all four for being here. Jeff Smith, Jane Condon, Shawana Brooks, and Allison Galloway Gonzalez. We could keep talking, but unfortunately we have to take a break. So thank you both, or thank you all, for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
High housing demand and low housing supply has sent real estate prices in LA way up. That is the science of economics. Home staging is the art.
Do I want to make it unaffordable? No. But it is our goal for people to get their very best price for their home.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, setting the stage to sell for top dollar. That is next time on Marketplace. weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On PRI's The World, we look at immigration by listening to immigrants, like this MIT student who is undocumented.
It's part of my identity at this point. I've gone through many, many struggles because of it, but it has taught me so much, and it has empowered me in ways that I never thought possible because of the community that I found through this struggle.
Immigration, ongoing coverage on PRI's The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, understanding the hate and violence in Charlottesville. ProPublica and Frontline PBS correspondent A.C. Thompson spent months investigating white supremacist organizations and their members who came to the Unite the Right rally last year ready for battle, one of them an active duty Marine. Thompson's reporting appears online and in a Frontline documentary Tuesday. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
North Korea has handed over 55 boxes of bones that it says are the remains of American service members. Work is now underway to connect the remains to any of the 5,000 people declared MIA in North Korea. What hope is there for the families who've longed for closure after losing loved ones in war? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, this weekend marks the second year for the LOL Jax Film Festival. You can check out 15 short comedy films by local filmmakers Saturday and Sunday at the Sunray Cinema in Five Points. Adam Madrid is the festival founder, also with the festival, local filmmaker Sharon Cobb, and they're here with a preview. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, so we need some laughs these days. Mm-hmm. We can get them this weekend, it sounds like. Tell me about the festival, Adam.
Yes, absolutely. It's me and my wife, Monique Madrid. We had this concept of having a comedy film festival with short films. It's all local short filmmakers. We also have local stand-up comedians mixed in with that. And we have a live local band this time, this year. This is our second annual one. And our local band is the Game Changers featuring Jatara. We can't wait. They're going to be at Root Down right after the screenings.
Yes. Yeah, so then, Sharon, after the screening, people will go next door to Root Down for some
after party.
Yeah.
After party. Lots of fun. Lots of laughing.
Yeah.
Yes. Not only at the films at the in the theater, but everybody has such a fantastic time.
And there's even an award show, right?
Yes.
Special awards.
Yes.
This is going to be like the Oscars.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. I mean, yeah, our host, awards host is going to be Kelly Moore, and yeah, she's going to bring the laughs there. And, you know, again, it's just something that we wanted to do to reward.
Which Kelly Moore?
Kelly Moore. It's she's a comedian here in Jacksonville, but
nice.
She, you know, she's amazing. And yeah, like I said, we're just going to have a lot of fun this weekend, you know.
And you're showcasing the local film community.
That's why I think Adam and Monique started the festival to start with. You know, it's LOL, laugh out loud, but also love our locals. And to give and all the filmmakers rally around and make films for this festival, which is awesome.
So these are short films, 15 of them.
Yes, 15 short films.
You can come and check out a few, or you can come do them all.
Yeah.
How short are we talking?
Now we have some that, yeah, like I said, it's around the 10-minute mark, but we have one that's like about a minute and a half, you know, so it all ranges. Again, we just want to give filmmakers here an opportunity. We just have so much talent here in Jacksonville, and it's just amazing. A lot of these filmmakers are going on to do feature films now, and, you know, we have like amazing filmmakers like Sam Farmer and Mike Heath and Royce, and it just, the list goes on of how many. Franklin Rich is one of the people that submitted a film here, and like I said, just so much talent here, and we're excited about it. And
I know Sam Farmer; he used to work here, actually.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, he's amazing. Like I said, he has a film coming out here soon. He's just an amazing filmmaker.
It is a great community. Unfortunately, Florida doesn't provide incentives for filmmaking, which has long been controversial. I won't take you down that road, but it can be tough to finish a film with a small or non-existent budget.
But one of the things that's happening now is that people are making short films that are called proof of concept films, short films that could very well be made into features, because it's easier for the Hollywood people who don't read to just look at a short film and go, oh yeah, that would that actually make a feature film? Yes, it would.
So a short film is sort of like almost your resume, I guess.
Very good. Yeah. The calling card, yes.
It's your calling card.
Mm-hmm.
So aspiring filmmakers that might have an idea, they need to come out to this and see what the climate's like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I have this attitude, and it's like, just do it. You know, just go for it. Don't let anything hold you back. I've had that mentality as me being a filmmaker. It was back in 2007 when 48 Hour Film started here in Jacksonville. I mean, it was obviously in Washington, but, you know, came here to Jacksonville from Mac McDonald. And from there, we had a Richard Kodai. Yeah, he started doing a Jacksonville short film showcase. And from there, it just started building. You started seeing, like, the film community just getting bigger and bigger and together. And, you know, once we get this thing going, you know, nothing can stop us. You know, like I said, there's going to be no excuses of not making films. Just get a camera, get a crew, and just do it. So,
and that's what everybody's doing every weekend. And we have a thing called Jacksonville Film Bar Monday, which is awesome. And it's held in different communities, different neighborhoods on Mondays.
Oh, very nice.
All the filmmakers come together. And sometimes we have 40 people at these events.
Cool. Yeah. Well, how can people get their tickets? Oh, they need to go to Sunrise Cinema to get tickets for this weekend, right?
Yes, go to Sunrise Cinema or just go to the box office there. We have, as of last night, we've had 51 tickets left for Saturday and about 80 tickets left for Sunday. So again, you want to scoop up those tickets as fast as you can. Again, we got amazing host Jen Weeks. She's going to be amazing there. We got comedians Christina Shriver on Saturday and Forrest Scott on Sunday. It's going to be an amazing
show.
And
this sold out last year.
Yeah. So don't be a walk up Jacksonville like you always do. Buy the tickets now for the LOL Jacks Film Festival this Saturday and Sunday at Sunrise Cinema from noon to 2 in Five Points, with live music and an after party and an award show, all in Five Points. Going to be a great creative weekend there in that neighborhood. So kudos, Adam Madrid and Sharon Cobb. Yeah, have a great time.
And Monique Madrid, absolutely.
And again, I just want to say thank you again to Kessa Creative and Upside Down Creative Media. They're just amazing. They've been a support for us for this whole thing. So.
And sunraycinema.com to get your tickets. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our show theme by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on 1A, Missing in Action, How the Remains of Soldiers Are Returned. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8, and we'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.